Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com.
Trying to choose the right supplements for the right horses often feels like a chore, and you have enough chores as it is. Fortunately, there's Equithrive, whose mission is to make this whole nutrition equation easier on you and much more beneficial to your horses. Equithrive's lineup of pelleted supplements are developed with care, backed by science, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. Not to mention picky eater approved. Whether you need advanced joint care for your equine athlete, gut or metabolic support, Equithrive is your one-stop shop for feed tub fortification. Do your horses and yourself a favor and visit equithrive.com. Use the promo code HumbleHoof and get 20% off your first order, plus free and fast shipping nationwide. Don't forget to use HumbleHoof, all one word, to get 20% off your first order at equithrive.com.
A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 20% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and the TPU upper design allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 20% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. A while ago, I started seeing posts from the Center for Racehorse Retraining on Facebook, and they really caught my attention. They had this priority of getting these off-track thoroughbreds out and moving 24/7 on a huge acreage out in Wyoming, and the changes they saw in these horses' bodies and their feet and their ability to become easier keepers and healthier was just amazing. I reached out to the founder, Kate Anderson, to see if she'd be willing to chat with me about what they do at this center and how they get these thoroughbreds, who are typically known for having difficult hoof issues and being harder keepers, to thrive and have healthy bare feet. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in thoroughbred rehab?
So I grew up doing dressage, and a mutual acquaintance was into thoroughbred racing, so he was interested in applying the dressage principles to racehorses, both in selection of prospects as well as in the actual training. So I started going to some auctions and getting a feel for the racing industry, and then going to the local track in Colorado, and I spent a couple summers there learning about how to train racehorses and more about the industry. And we eventually started running our own horses and getting to know more about the backside as far as, you know, the horses that don't do well. And, you know, many of them are very talented for second careers, and there's quite a need for people to offer second careers as well as rehab. So we started a nonprofit, and you know, initially the goal was to adopt these horses into second homes. And as we started to get more horses and larger numbers of thoroughbreds, we noticed more of a need for rehab as well. And so over the years, we've been listing more into rehab and retirement. So we're starting to see, you know, more of the issues, mainly because that's what we're focusing on. And that's, you know, we're still doing adoptables, but that's more or less how we are where we are.
Yeah. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your place? Where are you located, and what's the name of your nonprofit before I get into all the questions about the thoroughbreds?
Sure. Our nonprofit is Center for Racehorse Retraining. And again, that reflects more the original goal where we wanted to focus on adoptions. But as we've developed, the retirement sanctuary is much more in demand. So that's great. We're happy to do that. And our place is, I think, very unique in rehab in general, but especially in thoroughbreds. We have about 2,500 acres of open pasture, and we actually have a secondary or another facility that's about 100 acres. It's more traditional, so it has pens with loafing sheds. And we've been operating both of those for about 8 years. And the 2,500 acres, we're currently building a whole new facility that's focused purely around what we've observed in the horses on the open turnout. So we've more or less eliminated stalls other than in severe issues. And all the horses are kept as naturally as possible if they're not able to live on the 2,500. Otherwise, they live on 2,500 acres as horses in a big herd. And, you know, with very little intervention, you know, we of course check on them every day and take care of any needs that arise, but it's a much more minimalist approach.
Yeah. And so obviously a lot of these thoroughbreds coming from the track have been very micromanaged for quite some time. So how, like, what is the process for these horses coming to your property? Do they have to take time to be acclimated, or are they just kind of like tossed right out into the herd? How does that work?
It varies wildly depending on the individual. Some horses we can just pull their racing plates, kick them out, and they're great. We're taking a more stepwise approach now versus in the early years. So we'll put the horses in a pen. So our pens are anywhere from half an acre to 10. And we'll get them used to basically a prairie grass diet, pull their shoes, see what's there as far as feet and general health and behavior. Get them used to living in a small herd, and then we'll step them up from, you know, a half acre pen into a 4 acre and then into a 10 acre, and then we'll kick them out. So it's a little bit more stepwise now.
Yeah. And so when you're talking about the diet, are they mostly kind of grazing what's there, or do you have any kind of meals that you give them?
It's both. So we're able to customize as far as what the horse needs. So we do have, you know, the big herd that's turned out is on nothing but prairie grass. So they're grazing prairie grass, and they have salt licks, and that's it. Then the pens, most of them are on we purchased local round bales that are just prairie grass. So they're eating prairie grass, but it's, you know, out of round bales. And we do still have a grass alfalfa mix for horses that need a little bit more of a transition, or, you know, have just significant pathology where they just need calories. But we try to get them onto the prairie grass as fast as possible. That seems to be huge in their rehab. And then if we need to do supplements with a mineral, we can do that. But that's, you know, right now we have over 100 head and 2 are on minerals.
Wow. Yeah. And I ask about that because, you know, I have a much smaller property. And we do hoof rehab here. And I try to be as minimalistic as possible too in my, mm-hmm. in my diet. And we have a thoroughbred here. And, you know, I've never heard of like prairie grass hay. We don't have prairie like where we are.
Yes.
but, you know, I think there's this big, I don't want to say misconception, but there's this idea that thoroughbreds need to be on like very high calorie diets and lots of concentrates. And that's why I kind of asked specifically about that, because I think that can also play a role in what we see in terms of like quote unquote thoroughbred feet, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. We have far fewer issues with maintaining body condition on prairie grass than we ever did on the grass alfalfa with the concentrates. It's rare to have a thoroughbred that does not eventually become an easy keeper.
Wow. And sorry, this is just a kind of a question. I mean, maybe even just for my own personal curiosity, but what would you say like the prairie grass would be like consistent of? Is it a lower quality grass, or like what is in it?
Well, we're trying to find out how to effectively test 2,500 acres. Because what's been interesting, we do a lot of more intensive management of the ranch. So as we go out and check the horses, because we have anywhere from 50 to 75 head turned out, and they splinter into these small groups. So we cover the whole ranch when we're checking them every day. So we get to also see the grass every day. And the horses change where they eat based on the season. So, you know, they might graze one valley intensively in the winter, and then in the spring they're grazing on the hillsides, and we're not quite sure how to test for the variety. So we're looking into that. So we don't know exactly what it is. The other thing we've noticed is they eat a really wide variety of things. So it's not just the grass. They eat the bushes and the weeds. And last year when we cleaned up some manure, it was fermenting, and they ate that. They eat such a wide variety of odd things. So we're a little bit at a loss as to how effectively test everything.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's a big undertaking.
It is.
Having a hoof rehab facility, one main focus of ours is forage. I want the horses here to have safe, tested forage available 24/7 without the risk of becoming obese. I've spent years looking for the ideal slow feeder for us, and we have found it with Hay Boss feeders. When I tell you that my Hay Boss XL feeder has cut my feeding time by 90%, I mean it, and it might even be an understatement. The covered feeders with integrated slow feed nets allow for all my horses here to have access to hay all the time, which is healthy for their guts and minds. They're also not able to completely binge all at once because the nets keep them in check. They're available all over North America right now, but side note, if you're in New England, I got mine from Mountain Lane Farm, who delivered it right to me and showed us how to set it up and use it. We can't imagine our lives without it here. So, you know, these horses are coming in. I know when I see horses off the track, a lot of times their feet are not in the best shape. So what kind of hoof issues do you see coming in, and how do you see their feet change as they acclimate to this different lifestyle?
Yeah, I see most of the horses that we have come in, you know, have underrun heels, long toes, thin soles. That's fairly typical. We do get not a huge number of pedalocytosis, but we do get it. Abscessing is common. So I'd say those are probably the most common issues. It's been interesting. They rehab a lot faster when they're on the 2500, which I think is a huge surprise. They're moving so much and they get so much blood flow that it's just easier to rehab them. And we'll typically, a horse that's more fresh, we'll train them every 2 to 4 weeks until their angles are a little bit better. And then it will transition to more of an as-needed thing. So we'll check them monthly, but they might be trimmed every 3 months, they might be trimmed annually, or they might be trimmed every 4 weeks. But their angles do correct fairly quickly. And, you know, they develop pretty good concavity and pretty good soles fairly rapidly. You know, I'd say in that first year, we see big changes.
Yeah, and I do think, I mean, at least what I've seen in my own experience is that movement is hugely responsible for growing healthier feet. And I think a lot of people place, you know, healthy hooves on genetics or on, you know, kind of like the luck of the draw. And I have seen enough feet change with just like getting more movement or like taking out a lot of excess sugar and starches in their diet that I don't necessarily put as much stock into genetics anymore. Have you kind of like gone that direction too?
Oh, I completely agree. You know, genetics plays a role in everything, but I don't think it's predominant. I think the lack of movement, the diet, and stress are probably bigger factors. Because we also breed thoroughbreds on a smaller scale, so our homebreds are raised in this environment, and we do see different feet in those horses, even though genetically they're not different. So it's been a really interesting comparison.
What kind of differences do you see in the ones that are bred there?
Well, they don't require any maintenance. So they maintain their own angles. You know, they've got upright heels that are all the angles are as they should be. They've got solid soles, and they don't need intervention.
That's awesome. And so you're talking about like checking on the thoroughbreds to know how often to trim them. Are you looking for trimming? Are you looking for like simply like, oh, this horse has excess length, or are you looking for horses that where you need to do some kind of correction for angles, or, you know, what's your gauge for how often you're working on them?
Again, there's a wide variety, you know, there's a lot of variety, but I'd say for horses that are fresher off the track, we're looking more at bringing the toe back and, giving them time to grow. They grow a lot of bar out here, so we'll trim that off. Most of the time it's just balance, you know, more of like a medial lateral balance. So we'll touch up a heel or, you know, tuck the toe back a little bit on 2 feet and that's it. So it's fairly minimal since they move so much, but it's balance.
Yeah. And do you guys do it yourself or do you have a farrier that comes in or?
It's both. You know, we are able to trim. We do trim, but we also have a farrier that comes. She's coming every other week now, and she'll be here every week starting this summer.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I'm just so fascinated by this because my hoof care journey started with me going to a hoof rehab facility in England. And this is like a wildly controversial subject, I feel like, but those horses there rehab to soundness through allowing them to kind of self-maintain their feet through movement. Mm-hmm. And they had these horses that had all these crazy pathologies and distortions and issues that came up sound once they were able to just move and wear their feet naturally. And not that obviously I would never give this as an invitation to neglect, but I it's so amazing to me that there's like other people that are doing this and seeing similar results when, you know, you're kind of letting the body sort of heal and adapt and obviously watching and making sure that things are going in the right direction. But kind of giving it space to do what it needs to do is just, I don't know. I don't think we always give hooves enough credit.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And it just seems like the less you do, the better the results. Of course, you were not neglecting and that's not the right answer, but letting them move and letting them take care of themselves have dramatically improved results. We've got one mare who has severe, severe pedal changes. And she's actually developed quite a bit of bone density since she's moved up here about 2 years ago. And she's completely sound, you know, despite having some severe issues.
Wow.
So it's been really interesting to see how well they do and how well they are able to come around.
Yeah. And so that mare, that was like, did you check it through radiographs?
We did. So we did radiographs when we... a couple months off the track, and she had, you know, the typical long toe, low heel scenario. She had a little bit of bony changes, but she had chronic abscessing. I mean, she had abscessing almost all the way to the bone. So we casted her. This was at our other facility. We casted her for, gosh, months, and she did improve. But as soon as we take the cast off, she would slide back into this chronic abscessing. So we checked her radiographs again, and this is before we were using this the large turnout to the extent we are now. And she had, you know, she had developed pretty significant side bone, and her pedal bone had degraded. So we thought we'll turn her out because this is what we're doing is not working. So we did, and she's fine, and she's actually improving on radiographs.
That's amazing. Yeah. And yeah. So you're noticing with these horses too, that they're, you know, over time, not struggling over different surfaces, like their comfort level has been good barefoot.
What's been interesting is how fast it is for their feet. So we have another gelding who, you know, I had the typical thoroughbred foot, and he's another one. We could not keep him sound. We did glue on shoes. We did all the things, and we finally threw up our hands and kicked him out. And within 24 hours, he was moving fine.
Wow.
So it's incredibly rapid. And we're not exactly sure why. If it's, you know, the ground is different, if it's the movement, is that effective? Maybe their stress levels drop and they're more comfortable. But it was very rapid in him, and he has fabulous feet now. He has good angles, good concavity, and we do very little maintenance on him. I think he's one that we look at him every 3 to 6 months.
Wow. Yeah. And that's just amazing. It makes me wonder, you know, is it like you were saying, something's different out in that larger turnout, or is it, I mean, that's amazing that it can happen so quickly.
It is. It shouldn't happen that way, but it does. But on the flip side, you know, their body condition is not as fast. So some of them maintain great and they never really look back. And some of them will go through a period in the first year where they, you know, they don't look very good. They're not maintaining their hair coat very well, their weight very well. So we have to keep a close eye on them. But then once they hit that 12 month mark, then their body condition completely changes and they're fine. So it's been very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this makes me think about some cases that I see, not on my own property even, but some cases where, like you're saying, I've tried so many different things, so many different, glue on shoes, casting, like different forms of protection, and just trying to troubleshoot them. And I really think that, movement definitely plays a role. Or if it's the, like you were saying, there's less stress when they're out in a herd and they're kind of in a big environment that they can feel like they can go where they need to for safety. I don't know. It's so fascinating. I wish there was some way to get some funding for research to figure it out.
Yeah. And we're working on the research side. We'd like to try to do some studies and, try to narrow down what's happening.
Yeah. And you certainly have enough horses to do a really great sample size,
We do. We do. We can maintain about 150 here. So we could do some very interesting things.
Yeah. And as a side note, obviously thoroughbreds are very rarely metabolic, but ECIR has funding available for studies. It's more related to metabolic health, but I do know that I think they were looking for a farm or somewhere to do studies on diet and effect on hoof health. So that might be something to kind of talk about with them because they have the funds available.
Yeah, our farrier and I were talking about that last night. So we're very interested in pursuing that.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, those were some of my main questions, but I mean, I feel like there's so many thoroughbred owners, especially those that are dealing with really difficult hoof issues, and it's become such a stigma with thoroughbreds that I was wondering if you had any advice for owners of off-the-track thoroughbreds to kind of help them through some of that.
I think the biggest thing with the off-the-track thoroughbreds is giving them time to actually adjust. So they're so generous and, they've had a lot of good handling, a lot of good riding. So it's easy to immediately go into another career. But a lot of issues with these guys don't come up until they've had a chance to be let down or their lifestyle has changed. So giving them time to actually be a horse, to just be in a herd and have, basically a more basic diet, I think would help a lot of people out.
Yeah. And do you do anything like consults or do you chat with owners if they want to reach out? Is there a way they can contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to talk to owners, either as an advisory role or to accept horses in. So we do have people who will do the letdown period or rehab or retirement with us for a year or horse's lifespan, whatever they need. Our website is wyomingottb.org. That's probably the easiest way to find us.
Awesome. And then you have the Facebook page too, right? I think I've seen things shared on it recently.
It's Center for Racehorse Retraining. And awesome. That is on Facebook.
Yeah. Thank you. Great. Awesome. Is there anything that I didn't cover that you wanted to chat more about? I feel like there's so much we could even talk about on this subject that I don't want to totally gloss over something.
I think the only other thing that's a really big component is the general stress. So we've been getting horses in that are aggressive to their owners, and same deal. We see almost an instant decompression. So I think stress needs to be addressed more in rehabilitative settings, as well as just general horse ownership, which is, originally we were going to build a stall barn and do all these things to keep horses in a more traditional way. But anything you can do to reduce stress level is critical.
And can you give some more practical stuff for owners that maybe don't have such large turnout?
Yeah, it's if a stall is your only option, make sure that they can interact with the horse next to them. Try to stall them as little as possible. It's I understand in a lot of areas, stalls are what's available, but they really need interaction with a consistent friend. What we've noticed with the big herd is they have these consistent groups and they maintain those over years. So as much as they can have a consistent friend, I think that would help.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen the same thing here where horses sort of buddy up, and even in I mean, I don't have herds as big as yours at all, but even in, you know, smaller herds, I've seen horses kind of pair up or get little like friends that they sort of bond with, and it really helps them to acclimate to being out 24/7 here.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like the more that you can do that, whatever your boarding situation or your housing situation, the better.
Awesome. All right. Yeah. Well, this has been really cool. And I would love to at some point go out there and see your space. It sounds so amazing and kind of just like a little, you know, utopia of horse care. So that's so cool.
Yeah, you're more than welcome anytime. So just reach out if you ever want to visit, and we'll show you around and how everyone lives.
Great. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. And I will get this edited soon and I'll send it right back to you and you can let me know what you think.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Yeah, of course. Have a great rest of your afternoon.
I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person. And chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.
You too.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.